Many soldiers were troubled by such behavior. In this case, a soldier from another unit stated, "I reported the incident to my platoon sergeant and told him that I didn't want to work with these guys again." The strategic confusion about why the United States was in Iraq, such as the Bush administration's insistence that the war was part of the counterattack against al-Qaeda-style terrorism, and so was somehow a response to the 9/11 attacks, may have led some American soldiers to treat ordinary Iraqis as if they were terrorists. Some indeed were. But many, certainly the majority of those raided and detained, were just average Iraqis, not necessarily sympathetic to the U.S. presence, but not actually taking up arms against it, at least before they were humiliated or incarcerated. Of all the major conventional combat units operating in Iraq in 2003, the one that most consistently raised eyebrows was General Odierno's 4th Infantry Division. The warning signals, first picked up by the Marines who temporarily occupied Tikrit in April 2003, grew steadily louder. In July, a member of a psychological operations team attached to the 4th Artillery Brigade, which was known as Task Force Iron Gunner, filed a formal complaint about how its soldiers treated Iraqis. Artillery units seem to have been particularly prone to abuse in Iraq, perhaps because their core mission involves indirect fire, which may make them less comfortable with face-to-face confrontation. PSYOPs and civil affairs are parts of the Special Operations Command, but in Iraq, they were frequently placed under the command of regular combat units, such as infantry, armor, or artillery, where they often were unhappy with what they saw. In this case, the PSYOPs specialist said his team was especially concerned that the brigade's commander was employing ineffective tactics. Few of the raids and detentions executed by Task Force Iron Gunner have resulted in the capture of any anti-coalition members or the seizure of illegal weapons, he wrote. He placed the blame squarely with the artillery unit's commander, Colonel Kevin Stramara. This team has witnessed the colonel initiate these events. He charged that detention practices were capricious, sometimes based on the whim of the commander, or because more than $100 in Iraqi dinars had been found in someone's possession. One day in June, the PSYOP soldier said, a Bradley fighting vehicle had opened fire on a house, causing it to burst into flames. In a separate incident, a father of a 12-year-old boy who had been accidentally killed by U.S. forces and then buried was made to dig up the body himself. In a subsequent sworn statement, this member of the team, whose name was blacked out in the documents released by the Army, conceded that some of his charges were based on hearsay, but he stood by his bottom line. My overall feeling of the treatment of the civilian population is negative. I go out to the civilian community about 3 times a week to communicate with the Iraqi population to get an overall assessment of how the people see us. Through interpretation, the Iraqi people ask us why we are so unfair to them. One of the sworn statements filed by a civilian employee of the Defense Department working at the brigade's jail, apparently as an interpreter, although he didn't say so, seemed to back up that conclusion. I think 80% of the people we bring in are at the wrong place at the wrong time and have no intelligence value, he said. The Army's investigation found credible explanations for most of the specific charges. The house was fired on, the investigation concluded, because it had a bunker on its roof that was found to contain mortars and artillery rounds. The dead boy was buried because there was no place to keep his body, and unearthed without U.S. help because the family had asked that there be no U.S. participation. But the fundamental question of whether the brigade's tactics were misguided wasn't addressed by the investigation.